Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. It's fitting that one of the first shows at the newly reopened Cohoes Music Hall is Fantastic Negrito on October 13th. Both he and the music hall can be seen as throwbacks to a previous era, but both are firmly rooted in the present moment of the arts. Public radio listeners might remember Fantastic Negrito as the winner of the first Tiny Desk concert contest. Don't you cry if they make the best dream pies. You took their money, now you die. Feelings of rage. Well, before that, he also survived a car crash that left him in a coma for several weeks. His latest album is The Last Days of Oakland, and it's my pleasure to welcome Fantastic Negrito to the Roundtable. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
I had a question getting ready to speak with you. I didn't know what to call you, so I wonder, why do you like personas and alter egos?
I'm very insecure. I think that it's very fun, you know, as an artist to have different incarnations, and it kind of lets you be extremely liberal and courageous in terms of what you're going after, and I think genuine as well. And I think that the names always represent something. I've been Blood Sugar Eggs, I've been Chocolate Butterfly, I've been all these different incarnations, and Fantastic Negrito, I chose that name because I really felt that the community that I came from, we really didn't know the roots of a lot of our own music. We really didn't know who Skip James are. We really don't know who he is. We don't know who Robert Johnson or Charlie Patton or any of these innovators, these geniuses, these architects of world pop culture, in my view. I think that Black roots music is such an incredible garden that across the world, people pick from this amazing garden. I just want to give it the light and the respect that it deserved. And so there it is, Fantastic Negrito, and I was able to say that.
Is it also because you had a music career about two decades ago and used your name Xavier at the time? Were you trying to separate yourself from your first incarnation in music?
Well, no, I don't think so. I think what I was doing was just going along with what I thought was interesting, and edgy, and I always thought that music and the arts should be exactly that. And I was in a very, corporate setting when I signed my first deal, and I didn't really understand it. It's just fun. I mean, I know it sounds so simple, but it's very fun, and it's a lot more interesting just for me as an artist. But I don't know if I'm really trying to separate anything. It's just, I feel like, okay, I'm finished with that, and now I'm doing this, and this is incredible, and this is fun, and it's inspiring, and wow, you can really do something that's interesting and provocative to people. There's a bird at my window, she watches it all, she sells what I'm doing, she's hoping I'll fall. There's a bird in the bush, and there's one in my hand, sweet empty. Did you learn anything in that first portion of your career, what to do, what not to do, that influences your approach now? Well, yeah, we're always in a cycle of learning. We're learning, we're learning, we're learning all the time. And of course, as a youngster in his 20s, we've all made so many mistakes at that period in our lives. And I think I had learned to really be honest and really be passionate and stand up for something that you believe in. And to be an artist is really much more about contributing rather than taking. And it's not really so much about you, but it is about the contribution to the whole family, the human family. And I think that's what art is, and music. And it's inspiring, and it's incredible, and it's the soundtrack of humanity.
What did you do when you weren't doing music for, I guess, 4 or 5 years?
Well, I grew a lot of weed, marijuana, farm, got a farm, some chickens, had a son. You know, I wanted to try other things in life, and I did them, and I enjoyed them immensely. Started, you know, an art gallery, a collective, just got away from it all.
Did you always have in the back of your mind that you'd go back to it, or how did it happen?
Well, I thought I was finished. I didn't have anything to say, and I think if you have nothing to say, stop. It's funny, one of the things that I created brought me back, and that was my son. I had a son, and long story short, we were together. He was maybe 11 months old. I couldn't put him down, couldn't put him to sleep, and I'd sold all of my musical instruments and all my equipment. I had nothing left except for one really funky guitar, very cheap, that I kept for whatever reason underneath his little orange love seat in his room. I don't know why my infant had an orange love seat in his room, but he had one. And I just glanced at it for a moment. I thought, well, I remember picking it up, and I played a G major, and that changed the course of life for me, because the reaction he gave me off of that singular chord was amazing. You know, it was the biggest smile that I had ever seen in my life. And the eyes were filled with the most passion and enthusiasm and wonderment and mystery that I'd ever seen. And I felt afraid, excited, goosebumps, everything. Like, wow, what is this reaction? It's just a G major. But, you know, you learn from children. I think what he was saying was, wow, this is amazing. Why would you not do that? And so I began a slow walk back to music and to the birth of Fantastic Negrito. Don't shine. I shiver the whole night.
Has he kept up his enthusiasm for your music since that first chord?
He's my biggest critic. Yeah, no, nothing gets made without his approval. And I'm not joking. He's great.
Wow.
I don't even know if he's going to be a musician. He's just very honest.
If it's too personal, a question, that's fine. Just let me know. I read that you left home at age 12, and I wondered what your life was like, and now that you're a parent, if you're doing things any differently than what your experience was?
Well, sure, it's not too personal. I did leave. I was from a pretty strict religious family, Muslim family, and you know, I knew at a very young age that I, you know, this organized religion wasn't really something I was a fan of. I didn't like rules. I wasn't a fan of rules. And in a strange way, the relationship I had with my father, I don't know, I was ready. I know that's incredibly insane to people, but I seemed ready for this journey. And the streets were just calling me, and I just left. And it wasn't, I don't recommend that anyone do that. It's a terribly dangerous world out there, but it was a decision I made when I was young, and I shouldn't have done it, but I did, and through the luck and love, I survived it all, and I'm here to talk about it. But many others didn't survive it. I've seen it close up with my own two eyes.
I also want to ask you about the car crash you had. You describe it as a literal rebirth because you were so close to death's door. How did that influence your thinking?
Well, what happened, I think, when we experience great tragedy and great challenges, we can either become inspired, or we can capitulate, we can give up, we can fight on. And I've always been optimistic about everything, and this was just an opportunity to be optimistic on the most grandest scale ever. Something's taken away from you, and you realize how precious it is. You realize how precious life is, and movement, and the ability to function as a human being.
Your tour is taking place for the month of October, which politically is a big month, of course. And during the primaries, you were sort of closely aligned with the Senator Sanders campaign at times. And I wonder, do you see yourself as a political musician, and will you be commenting, you know, from the stage or in your music with Election Day getting close?
Well, I was very close with the Bernie Sanders campaign. I was very happy to support him just as a citizen of the empire, so to speak. But I don't see myself at all as a political artist. I just feel like, you know, once you choose sides like that, you're done. To be a politician, it just seems like it's a lot of pandering. I don't think I'm very good at being a politician. I really say what I feel. And I'm not politically correct at all. Just listen to the album.
Yep.
And I have no desire to be a political musician. This is just life, and it's happening. And the job of artists is to be very honest, be a very honest voice for people, because politicians won't. So I really feel like it's the job of artists. That's kind of our job. We, you know, keep it real and keep it interesting and tell the truth as much as we can, as best as we can, because it's not easy to tell the truth, at least for me.
Last question. On your site, you describe your life as having been split up into three distinct portions, three separate lives, and the third is this current iteration as Fantastic Negrito. I wonder, do you anticipate there being a fourth?
Well, I hope not, because it's usually interrupted by something tragic and dramatic. I don't think so. I mean, the first one being, you know, you go and you get this record deal, and then, you know, you get in this accident and you're in a coma, and then you quit, and then you do it again. But you never know. That's the beauty of living every day, and that's the so it keeps this planet going. We get up, man, things happen every day, and we don't know. But we do the best we can with what we have. We keep on trying. Keep on going. Who knows what's going to happen.
Fantastic Negrito will be at the Cohoes Music Hall on October 13th, and his latest album is The Last Days of Oakland. It's just been a pleasure to speak with you, and I'm very excited to have you back in town.
Thank you very much. I look forward to the show.
It's a tribe and a tribe. Oh, nothing.
Listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.